Ulrich is a chain-smoking, tough-as-nails investigative journalist for the New York City newspaper, The Daily Bugle. Lois Lane is an award-winning, tough-as-nails reporter for the Metropolis newspaper, The Daily Planet. Chris Hoffman is not. He's the guy we got on a podcast. It's time for the Lane Ulrich Report with extra special correspondent, Chris Hoffman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Lane Ulrich Report. I'm Chris Hoffman, co-founder of Validity Studios. My guest today is Mike DeBolfo, famous alumni of the Kubert School of Comic Book Art, which is the Harvard of comic book art. He's famous for his good girl art style, and you've seen his work on Grim Fairy Tales, Soulfire, many Zenoscope and Aspen titles, along with so many variant, exclusive, and custom covers. If we spent the time here listing those, that's all we would do for the rest of the show. Welcome, Mike, and thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chris. It's good to be here.
Awesome. So we were talking a little bit before we started recording here about your experience at the Kubert School. Which, yeah, like I said, is colloquially known as the Harvard of comic book art. Know a bunch of alumni from there. Steve Lieber. I believe Ryan Ottley took like some of the correspondence courses from there.
Yeah, I heard he. I heard he did the correspondent remote classes.
Yeah.
I heard that. Yeah.
That's awesome. And so what was your experience with the Kubert School?
Oh man, gosh, it's been a while since I've told this. Where do I start? Going in, it was pretty intimidating because, like you said, it's like I grew up reading comic books and I always saw the Kubert School ads in the comics I would read. And as a kid, I was like, I want to go there. And, you know, I learned that Andy and Adam Kubert teach there as well as Joe Kubert. And of course, you know, they're legends in the industry. So anyway, as a kid, I always wanted to go there. And so when I finally got to the point where I graduated high school and I'm going to apply, like, it was so intimidating. I was like, oh my God. You know, I remember going in for my you have to go in for a portfolio review to get accepted. And I went in and met with their dean at the time, this guy, Mike Chen, and he's going through my portfolio, you know, flipping through the pages. He's not saying anything. Like, he says like this stone wall face on it. I'm like, oh man, he thinks I suck. Like, I'm not getting in here. It's not going to happen. So anyway, I end up getting accepted. And after you get accepted, then it's like the first day of school. It's like, oh man, like everybody goes around the classroom and kind of just tells a little bit about themselves. And everybody in the school says the same thing. Everybody in the class says the same thing, blah, 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 blah. I was always the best artist in my class growing up, so on and so forth. And that was me too. Like, I was always the best drawer in my class growing up. And so then it hits and you're like, oh man, you know, these aren't normal kids. These are all the kids, the best of the best from their schools when they were growing up. And now you're in with them. And like the intimidation, you know, sits in a little bit further. And I think it was like the second or the third day, we got a homework assignment. Go home and draw whatever you want and bring it back to class tomorrow. And we'll present it in front of the class and then we'll do an open critique. So I'm like, oh man, okay, it's gotta be the best damn drawing I've ever made in my life. So I go home and I drew whatever, just made up some character. And I come back and everybody's putting their pieces up on the board or around the classroom to show off. I'm like, oh man, these dudes are really good. All these guys are really good. And I put my piece up and I step back and I look around and it's like, oh, okay. Well, you know, I'm not at a place. Like, I feel okay now, you know, like, all right, I'm up here with these guys. And so that felt nice. But then, you know, from there, it's not an easy school. It's not like if anybody decides that they want to attend, you're going to get what you put it, you're going to get out of it, what you put into it 100%. The teachers do care that you're performing and how you're performing. They really do. But you're going to get out of it what you put into it. It's hard work. The dropout rate for the first year is somewhere, it's got to be close to 30-40% just that first year. It opens up, the first year is when I was going, it was three full classrooms of students. The second year is people drop out and people don't come back. Second year is usually two classrooms full of students. And then the third year is one classroom of students because the dropout rate just kind of continues over the years. I always kind of compared it to comic book boot camp. You're going to go in there, you know, a ball of clay as an artist, but when you leave, you're going to be carved out of marble because they really put you through the ringer. You are drawing all the damn time. You know, you're drawing for the 6 or 8 hours that you're at school. You got homework assignments from multiple classes every week, every day. And so you're drawing when you get home. I had a part-time job on top of all that. So it was really grueling. If you're in a relationship, good luck. If you want a date, good luck, because you probably won't have time for a lot of things other than drawing. And maybe if you want a part-time job, but, the teachers are great. They allow you to explore a lot. You don't just study comic book art. You study all art. You study fine art, abstract art, impressionism, all types of cartooning. Gosh, it's a legit art school. Like, you're not going there just to draw comic books. A lot of the projects are focused and, say, comic book related, but you'll be doing acrylic and oil paintings and things like that. And if you want to do it as a comic book character, or anything you want, really, you're free to do that. You're not going to get poo-pooed on for drawing Batman and painting Wolverine and things like that, as you maybe you will at another art school where they might look down on that sort of thing.
Right.
But it's an intense school. It's not for everyone, like I said. But if you really want to do it, you know, it's worth it. It's an experience. I can't stop saying it. Like, you're going to get out of it what you put into it. If you go into it and you give it half percent or 50%, you're gonna walk away with 50%. You know, you'll be a better artist, but not the best you could be. If you go in and you really put 100% into it, you're gonna walk away 100% better, and you'll notice these huge strides every few months, and then really huge strides from year to year. Like, I couldn't draw people when I first attended. I couldn't draw people. My whole portfolio was like dragons and skulls and just silly shit like that. You know, so. Again, that's I put really the cool. time in. Yeah, I took the time to do it all, and whatever. I'm ranting now.
No, you're good.
But
that's I'm fascinated with this. We publish a small comic book here, and we had a Kubert student, Chris Puglis, who did some work. He was able to do it as an assignment, and we published it. So he was able like sort of double dip with it. So I love hearing stories from from the school. Did it help you with your industry contacts going there?
Not really. No. I can't say that it did. I'm sure for other students, maybe they did. I can't say I met anybody in the industry through the school. They would have guest speakers come in every once in a while. But I was always kind of a shy kid.
Okay.
So I never took the initiative to kind of go up after the lecture and talk to anyone. But you have that opportunity. Yeah, every few months or so, they have a guest speaker come in, and it's not always like some big name. Like, you're not going to have, well, maybe you will have Jim Lee come in there, but most of the time it's not someone like that. It's usually a friend of one of the instructors who will come in and give a lecture. So you have the ability, and they have a portfolio review. I think it's at the end of third year. When I was going, they had portfolio reviews with DC Comics.
Right.
So I know a lot of guys after their third year, they did that, and they may or may not have gotten their foot in their door through that.
Very cool. No, that's great. So I noticed on your Facebook page that you had a contest going last month with Ryan Kincaid.
Oh yeah,
you
yeah.
both did a cover. I'm sorry, the title is lost on me at the moment. What was
the book was for his book his for Ryan's book Persuasion, and
yes.
we captioned that as Who Did It Better.
Yes, who won?
And I don't think we ever really took a tally on it. We've done it twice before that.
Okay.
And I think, like, I came out on top the first time. Ryan came out on top the second time. And this time through, I think we just got both got distracted or maybe used to the process at this point, and didn't really count a tally. But it's not a real contest.
Oh,
it's just
sure.
me and Ryan being, you know, a friendly competition between the two of us. Something
no,
fun
I wanted
the,
to know who won.
To play around
who,
with.
Who's yeah. better? I'm going to say you because you're on the show right now.
I'm going to go ahead and say that I won.
we'll officially announce that right now. You won since you're here. So. That's awesome. So, like, the a lot of your artwork and is on Kickstarters as variants and whatnot. How has Kickstarter sort of changed the way, or has it created a new revenue stream? How has like crowdfunding really affected you with your work?
For me personally, it hasn't changed much. It's changed how my work is distributed, I can say. Yeah, right now that's a better part of my revenue stream as far as getting published work is through Kickstarters and things like that. So for me personally, it's still, you know, I get contacted, I draw the image, it gets published, so on and so forth. With a lot of the Kickstarter stuff, there's a little bit more leniency with what I can do with the image afterwards. If I can make prints, reprint it in other ways, things like that. A lot of those guys are a little bit more lenient about the stuff. A lot of them, not all of them. Whereas with a former publisher, say like Zenoscope or Aspen, you should really talk to them before you do something like that. You know, like if I'm doing something for Soulfire or Fathom or Grim Fairy Tales, like if I want to make a print or if I want to reproduce it into an art book or something like that, there's not hoops to jump through, but you usually have to have a conversation with them. And sometimes there's some negotiations with the Kickstarter stuff. A lot of those guys, they're pretty lenient. They're like, yo, if you want to reprint this, if you ever want to do anything, you know, before I even do the image, they'll say that. They'll say, you can go up and you can do it. You can use it for whatever you want. Just, you know, let us know about it or give us credit. Mm-hmm. But for the industry as a whole, I see a lot more creators coming in now. A lot more people creating new content, new books, new titles and things like that than there was before. There's a heavy plethora of work available now for comic book artists out there because of things like Kickstarter. Because it gives an avenue to people who are just starting up to kind of go out there and try to live their dream and achieve their goal without having a ton of capital needing to be raised to launch a publishing company or even to approach a publishing company and shop the property around to somebody. They can avoid all of that mess and just like, oh, fuck it, I'll just do it on my own. Mm-hmm. You know? So because of that, whether you're an interior artist or a cover artist or a pinup artist or whatever, there's a lot more work available now because of crowdfunding. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
How about for Whatnot, the auction site? A lot of I've seen a ton of your artwork move on there, and artwork that's similar. Ryan Kincaid is one, and I don't know how to say his last name. Elias Chazutz.
I think it's Chazutz.
Okay, And so you see a lot of that. Oh, go ahead.
No, I met him a handful of times, but I've never asked him his last name.
Okay, right on. I have a buddy who does a Whatnot auction. It's Captain Electric on Whatnot, Ron, if anybody wants to go and check out his channel. He does a specific ladies' night now that he does where it is all good girl art, and he makes a killing. And so Whatnot, have you... Do you have any interaction with the people on there, or do you do anything with
Not yet, because I'm stupid. tons of people have told me, like, oh, man, you got to get on Whatnot. You got to get on Whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I know I should. I'm not the most focused person in the world sometimes. Like, I've been doing the drawing thing for so long. That's my focus. Like, I draw... Mm-hmm. And I make money, and that's what I do. But yeah, I have boxes of books over here that I can sell and things like that. And so I don't have any experience personally, but I hear the stories about how profitable it is, and even to the point where Whatnot, the company itself, now does their own exclusives. Mm. I know they've made deals with people like Murat Michaels. Mm-hmm. They've done covers with him, and they've made business arrangements. We'll say, you know, specifically with comic book creators. So I know there's a lot of potential there too. So it's like, if Kickstarter is not your thing, like, yeah, you can always try something like Whatnot, which is like, yeah, it's like a live eBay is what I kind of gather it to be, which is very, very lucrative right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and eBay is like, they want to own the auction space, right? So now they have their own version of these live auctions that they're doing as well. And so again, it's really interesting to see the models of how comic books are being sold and made changing, because it's not necessarily only the direct market now, right, to comic book stores.
Right.
It is from creator to fan directly through crowdfunding and printing on your own through Kablam or Comics Wellspring or something like that, or Print Ninja, bigger ones if you get enough books. And then later on, now the distribution channels. One of the things about Whatnot that I didn't know before was that a lot of the sales are going to people who don't have a local comic book store. So rural locations, people who, or they don't like their local comic book store. A lot of big cities actually don't have a very nice comic book store nearby. And so it's just like a mail order service. People will go on Whatnot and just sell what's comes out on Wednesday. It's a new Wednesday deal. And then you send them out. So that's really interesting. There's a lot of, like you said, a lot of opportunities for people to make a lot of money there.
Yeah, even for collectors, there's a lot of opportunity to find those books you need or you want that maybe you can't find locally or at conventions.
Right.
And it's all auction-based, too, so you might get it at a fair price.
Right. No, that's great. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, so I want to talk about commissions a little bit. How many about how many conventions do you hit in a year?
Not many. Okay. I used to do a lot. I used to do 8 to 10 a year. Okay. This year or this time now, now maybe 4 or 5 tops.
Okay.
Just because of things like online, mm-hmm. online purchasability, mm-hmm. like I can sit at home and make as much or more money in a weekend sitting at home selling things online than I could go into a convention with overhead costs of a hotel, a flight, table cost,
sure.
all that.
Maybe it's a city you don't want to visit.
Sometimes it's that too. Yeah, right. Exactly. You know, going to a convention is still important. Like I understand that people want that face time. There's a value behind that. I get it. So I still make an effort to do conventions, just not as many as I used to do. I try to kind of focus on, we'll say, bigger conventions or places that I haven't been before. Hmm. So sometimes I'll pop up in like a really small, weird place, you know, and it's only one because I want to check out the city, hmm. even if it's a small show. I'm like, oh, that, you know, whatever. Oregon seems like a cool place. I've never been there, so I'll go do some small show up there. But not many shows anymore. No.
Okay. Well, when you did shows, so yours is good girl art. So you draw these very gorgeous women, famous for that. Do you get weird requests from people?
Not anymore. I used to get some weird requests.
What were the weird requests you used to get?
Oh man, there's one. This was years and years and years ago. I forget exactly the exact details of it. This guy wanted a commission of a girl tied up and like crying and things like that, with a gag in her mouth, and a dude holding a gun to her head.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, that didn't make me feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. I was like, I didn't draw that. Mm-hmm. When I do what I do, like, I don't really like the idea of putting the girls in a position of vulnerability like that. Like, when I draw what I draw, I try to portray it as in, like, we can say the woman is in control of her sexuality at mm-hmm. that point. You know, that's what I try to achieve with it. So when someone asks me for something like that request, or something that I feel like is a little beyond the boundary of what I'm comfortable with, like I won't do it. I've gotten requests for like Sonic the Hedgehog. I've gotten requests for some things. Not that I can't like draw Sonic the Hedgehog or anything like that, but it's just a silly thing, I think, to come up to someone like in my position to have drawn. It's been so long since I've had an odd request, honestly. I don't know why that is. I can't think of any more right now.
Right.
Sometimes people will come up to you and they'll have, they'll say, oh, can you draw my original character? And some, you know, usually I'm like, that's fine. As long as I have it fleshed out and something to kind of use as reference, it's usually not an issue. But I've had a few people come up to me and they'll have like papers, printouts stapled together. I'm like, well, I want these wings and these boots and these glasses and these shorts. And it's like, dude, like I'm at a convention. I don't want to play character design while I'm at a convention. Like, this is already enough work as it is being here at the table, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's not really a weird request, but for me personally, I don't prefer to do that. Like that's a bit, it becomes work at that point. Cause I got to sit there and they're not an artist, so I don't know if these elements are going to go together or make any sense together. So you kind of have to troubleshoot around that sometimes. I've done it like once or twice, but I don't really take those requests anymore.
Sure. No, that's really interesting. There was I heard rumors that there was there's a famous commissioner who asks for mermaids, but then wants them in a very specific, and they're not, and it's more weird because it's like I want a mermaid who is sitting in a like regular fish sized tank, and William Shatner is sitting in a chair looking at
really?
Her.
Really? Yeah. That specific?
Yes. And I've heard that from several people. Like this commissioner goes to lots of shows and gets this specific scene done by a lot
no
of.
Kidding.
So it's like, well, is this just kind of a joke that came around? And he's like,
yeah,
look,
right?
My whole portfolio is this mermaid with
William Shatner watching mermaids.
Yes.
I haven't met that guy yet.
Okay, well, when you do,
that's kind of awesome.
You can be like, I heard of you.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That's pretty great. So yeah, so do you do the when you do these commissions at home, do you create content out of it? Like, do you broadcast on Twitch and or Facebook Live or anything like that? Or are you just kind of like doing it on your own and then showing the finished product?
Yeah, mostly I'm doing it on my own and then showing the finished product, again, because I'm not very smart. Like, again, I've had tons of requests to be on camera. And I have a camera attached to my desk over here that and all that ready to go. But the camera quality is just crap. Mm. So I need to invest in a new, better camera before I can do something like that. And it's like everything else I was just saying. It's like, I just keep putting it off. Like, artists are notorious for that sort of thing. It's like, I'll do it later. I'll do it later. You know, you get caught up in whatever else you need to do. But I do enjoy watching that sort of stuff. Like, I watch David Finch's YouTube channel often when he's sitting there doing his live drawing and things like that. Richard Friend sometimes does it as well. I'll watch guys do it. I mean, myself, because I'm who I am, I haven't taken full advantage of it yet.
Sure. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. This podcast setup that I'm doing here, I've been doing these sort of podcasts on and off for a few years, and I do the same thing where I'm like, oh, I need a camera or I need a thing here, and then it just doesn't pan out. So, but I'm enjoying doing this now. So cool. I get exactly what you're saying, that the artists are exactly like that. It's like you're focusing on like the making the art look cool instead of the promotion of yourself, and that happens to a lot of artists.
It does, rather.
Yeah, for sure. So I've always wondered something, and hopefully you can shed some light on this, because I thought if it worked, anybody who could do this would be a millionaire, right? And so if you go onto eBay right now, for example, and you look up like Mike DeBolfo, and you can see on there just pages of your artwork. And so it's sometimes variants and sometimes, but every once in a while it'll be like a commission that has been graded by CGC and a nice grade, like a out there grade 9.8, right? Up for, and it goes for $400, $500, something like that. Is that something like, could you have your neighbor or like your significant other be like a CGC witness and then be like, here we go. And just every day it goes on to eBay.
Man, I haven't thought about that before. That's a great idea, actually. I haven't thought about that yet. That'd be such an easy revenue stream, right? Yeah.
Right. I always wondered that because it was like, is that something you could do? Because, I mean, some artists get fairly upset about this. They will...
Yeah.
You notice you go to conventions and there will be an artist, and if it is and I'm going to say his name incorrectly, and because I've heard it said a bunch of different names but ways, but Fabian Nicenza. If you go to his table, and he's a wonderfully nice man, I've met him a few times, and he's so kind with all of the very demanding fans, but he has a sign at his table that says if it has Deadpool or X-Men on it, it's $10 to $20 to sign it. If it's a CGC, it's $40 to sign it, right? If it's anything else of the hundreds of things he's ever done, anything else, Thunderbolts, New Warriors, NFL Pro, it's free. You can just have it signed. But I think that's like a response. The other thing that's fun that he does is if someone brings up fan art, like it's a Deadpool that's done by a fan there, he'll look for a Marvel copyright symbol on it, and then he'll tell them why they should buy copyright stuff because,
really?
Yeah, he'll be like, yeah, this is really nice. It's beautiful. I love the artwork, and he'll sign it and everything, but he'll be like, hey, take a look and see if it has a Marvel logo on there, because then that means it's official. And then I actually, you know, I'm supported from my creation from this, you know, gives him a very gentle, lesson on copyright. But so that seems to be a lot of people, like, they'll see the eBay stuff go off and then they're like, well, how come I'm not getting a piece of that pie, right?
I've heard what you're talking about. We could start with artists getting upset when their commissions and their sketches are flipped on eBay. And personally, it doesn't really bother me that much. That's such a topic to open up on. It's like, for me, it doesn't bother me much, because the way I look at it is, say Chris, you commission me to draw whatever, and you pay X amount of dollars. I draw the piece, I get my X amount of dollars, and I send it off to you. My only thing is, like, you know, please don't reproduce it without you know, without my consent. That's all. I wouldn't want to see bootleg things mm-hmm. going out there and potentially coming back at me if a copyright holder sees it and like, hey, Mike, you know, why are you doing this bootleg thing? So for me, that's what it is. Like, I don't want that backlash of a copyright holder coming after me, because they're not going to go after you. They don't mm-hmm. know who you are, probably. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and also on top of that, it's like, well, you paid me for a service. I provided that service. Now you have your product. Like, if I go out and I buy a Batman action figure from Walmart, you know, okay, yes, that's mass produced. Maybe it's a bit different, whatever else. But even if it's a limited edition Batman, let's say there's only 5 in existence, right? Once I buy that Batman, I can do whatever I want with that Batman figure. I can blow it up. I can melt it. I can throw it in a toilet. I can put it on my shelf forever. It's mine. I can do what I want with it. So I kind of see my artwork as the same way. Like, once you buy something and you have the artwork, the physical copy of that artwork is yours to do whatever you want with. If you want to sell it on eBay and make $5,000 off of it, well, power to you. I couldn't sell it for that much. So I don't know what you did, but good for you. You know, take your $5,000. And I've had recently somebody sold a sketch I did of a black cat, and it sold on eBay for like $1,300. Wow. It was just a sketch cover. And I was really surprised by that. I'd never seen my art sell for that much, especially a sketch cover, I should say. And the guy contacted me, and he hit me up. He's like, hey, man, you know, I didn't think this was going to sell for this much. And he explained why he sold it. Like, he's in a hard time. And gave him my blessing and all that. I'm like, that's fine, man. And he's like, I don't feel right taking all this money. Like, I want to send you some of this. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, man, like, I didn't feel right taking the guy's money. Like, again, I got paid for my service, what I was charging at that time. You know, you needed the money, take it. It's yours. I'm not going to be butthurt about it. But I know some guys are really bothered by that, because they see, and I understand where they're coming from too, and they're bothered by it, because it's an investment of time on their end that they probably took out of their day away from their work schedule to draw or illustrate something for someone. Maybe they could have spent that time with their kids, or they could have spent that time with their family, whatever else. But this guy's here flipping it on eBay now. And that's fine too. Like, that's how you see it. That's your own personal values about the situation. For me, it doesn't bother me much, just mm-hmm. because I'm a commercial artist. That's what I do. Like, commercial art is just that. Like, it's meant for the public. It's meant to be a product. And I'm sure there's plenty of people who would completely disagree with me about that, but that's the fact of the matter. Like, when you work in comic books, you are a commercial artist, whether you like it or not. You know, if you see people flipping your prints or your sketches or anything else, like, try not to take it so personally. It's not a diss against you. Are they trying to profit off of you? Yeah, maybe, but so are your publishers. You know, does that bother you? So
that makes a lot of sense. On it. Howard Chaykin is pretty famous for at San Diego Comic-Con saying, if you work in the comic book industry, if you're a commercial artist and whatnot, he's like, we're prostitutes. We get paid to do. Howard's outspoken, right? So, but yeah,
that's your choice to do that. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, it's like these like rock stars who become rich and famous from playing their music, and then they're like, oh man, being a rock star sucks. I hate my life. But they don't stop being rock stars because they love something about it. You know, they like the attention, or they like the money, or they like something about it. It's the same thing. Like, yeah, we kind of are prostitutes in the comic book industry, but you are a commercial artist. You should know what you're signing up for. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to put your stuff in galleries and things like that, then pursue that. That's mm-hmm. that's kind of completely different. But you're providing for a product, and you have to be okay with that. You have to not get. That's another thing they teach us in the Kubert School too. Is like, they say, don't marry your artwork, and they mean that in different ways. It's like, one, don't marry your artwork where you spend 80 hours drawing one image and you're married to every line that you're putting down and you can't let things go. And also, don't get married to your artwork, because you are creating a product. You know, after you draw something, an editor might come in and say, oh, that leg looks like shit. I need you to change the whole leg, or have someone else come in and do a paste up over that leg or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. and change it without your consent. So because you're providing a product, it's your artwork. Yes. But it's not necessarily completely, what am I trying to say there? It's not completely emotional freedom or creativity that's driving what you do. It's just not. Right. Not 100%.
Right. Yeah. Well, commercial illustration and doing it as a product has a difference from fine art, right? Because it's, yeah. The difference is, that's why it's commercial on there, is because it's art with a purpose.
Right.
For art's sake is art, and all of it's art, but commercial art is art for a purpose. And like you said, that purpose many times is to make a profit. So if you feel like you got what you wanted out of the deal, then it's fair for you not feel like if someone else does something else with it. And like you said, if they have the contacts or someone to make a profit off of there, and that's what they want to do with the thing they bought from you, then that sounds great.
That's kind of how it has to go. Mm-hmm. So that's nothing, like if you're trying to break in and you're not okay with that sort of thing, like you might want to reconsider it, because it's going to happen, especially if you become popular, mm-hmm. you know, which you want to be popular. Of course you do.
Sure.
So that it comes with the territory.
Right.
There's something else in my mind just there for a second. I forgot what it was, but anyway, yeah.
Oh, you're good. You mentioned the bootleg stuff. I saw that has apparently happened. I saw a note in your on one of your posts into DeviantArt. There was someone who had noticed that there was a image of yours that had been put into an adult coloring book eBay. Have you seen that, a lot of that as a problem with your artwork, that it's being lifted and...
Yeah, it's happened. It's happened plenty of times. Like, especially when I was heavy into DeviantArt, and even now, every once in a while, it pops up. Like, someone will send me a link, like someone's making T-shirts, or they're making mugs, or even prints, any number of things, you know, phone cases and things like that. And people will say, oh, you know, this person's using your artwork for this. And yeah, more often than not, I will reach out and say, hey, look, you know, you got to stop doing this. Mm-hmm. There's been a ton of that stuff on eBay. I've talked to people about. And most of the time, people are pretty understanding, and like, oh yeah, okay, you know, and they remove the product and things like that. But there was one time years ago, somebody was lifting my art off of DeviantArt. They're taking a low res color samples, and it was an online store called Zazzle. It's kind of like Etsy in a way, and they were making cups and mouse pads and all this other stuff about it. And I didn't know it about it. They're using a lot of my Zenoscope work. They emailed me I think it was like the president of the company. I think it was Joe. Like, it went right to the top, you know, and he emailed me, and he's like, hey, Mike, this online store Zazzle is selling your stuff. What can you tell us about that? And I was like, oh man, I have no idea. Like, this is completely new to me, but somebody was lifting my art off of DeviantArt, whether they were from Zazzle or associated with Zazzle in some way, and producing products without consent on this website. And Zenoscope caught wind of it, and they approached me about it. And I'm like, dude, I don't know anything about this. They were pissed. They were like, they sounded pissed. So I'm like, I kind of cleared my hands of that, because I was innocent. I didn't know what was going on. And I don't know, a short while after that, I see Zenoscope advertising their Zazzle store, selling my artwork on like mugs and mouse pads and all this other stuff. So I guess through their talks with the, with what came to be, they worked something out with the company. They ended up producing their own section of Zazzle to sell product and stuff through, which is their right as the publisher to do that. They own the copyrights to that artwork.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, they saw a revenue opportunity there, and they were like, if anybody's going to be making money off of this, it's going to be us.
That's kind of how it was. Right. And it was completely acceptable of it. I was like, that's fine. Whatever. Do you think?
This isn't a regular 9-to-5 job. You don't, it's not like back in the day, the Marvel bullpen, which never existed in the first place, but
I just read about that actually. Yeah.
Oh yeah. The Untold Story of Marvel, book.
That's
the
novel I just read.
Okay.
I just finished reading that. Yeah.
I highly recommend it. Anybody's interested in comic book history. Although on one hand, it's amazing. On the other hand, you start learning a whole bunch of stuff about your heroes where you're like,
oh my
man.
God. It's depressing at points to read that book. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. kind of sad sometimes, but it's good.
Yeah.
Oh, it's very in depth.
It's true, right? So if the truth makes you sad, that's an appropriate response to sad things having happened to people.
Yes, absolutely. You have a conscience and a soul.
Yes, we have a so we have a comic con here called FanX in Salt Lake, a fairly big show that we pitch. Panels too, right? And one of my friends, Chelsea Bloomfeld, she always pitches a panel of Stan Lee, like, what were the let's look at the little bit of the, you know, darker side of Stan Lee and his background, right? Just to get the truth out there, you know what I mean? And be like, He was a mixed bag is the thing. He was very innovative person and such a great personality, but he was involved in a lot of stuff where with the contract signing problems and with the things with Jack Kirby and whatnot. And so she always pitches this thing and boy, does she get shut down. They're like, You are not going to speak ill of Stan Lee. We always joke around that there's this secret police that sits around waiting for her to say something about it, and she's going to get pulled into a van. We're never going to hear from her again. The Excelsior police are going to show up.
The Excelsior police. That's awesome.
But
true believers.
Yes. Yeah. The true believers. Oh my gosh. This is, I think we have a concept here. But, oh my gosh, I'm so far off of what I was going to ask about with the Stan Lee stuff. The revenue streams. So you don't have this isn't a regular 9-to-5 job, unless that's when you wake up and do your artwork. How do you put together so many different things? Like, where does your revenue come from?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. Of course, I get a paycheck from, doing an assignment for a publisher. Or say a commission or a private commission, like I get a flat rate fee for that basically, which is X amount of dollars. But it's not always enough to cover the bills for the month. So then on top of that, when you work with a publisher, almost all of the time you're entitled to, but they'll send you complimentary copies of the book that you worked on. And if you're lucky enough for it to be an exclusive where it sells for at least $20 or sometimes more, you'll get, I don't know. It depends on the publisher. Sometimes you'll get 2 to 10 copies of that book. Not right away. It's usually when the book comes out, which is usually at least a month away. So you get copies of those. And so you can add that to your revenue stream too. Like you can sell those books off through things like a Whatnot store or eBay or through a convention, things like that. Conventions are another way to make a revenue stream work out, where you can go to a convention and you can choose or not. You can choose to or not to sell products and prints, things like that. You can sit there and just do commissions, which is fine. Or you can do a mixed bag of things. You can do commissions and prints and whatever, make product for stickers, all sorts of things. So that could be a good way to make money as well, of course. On top of that, there's commissions. And with commissions, I always suggest to artists to have, with commissions and things like that, try to have price points for different levels of collectors. Like you want to hit that guy who maybe he's really, really into your artwork, but he doesn't have a lot of money and he can only afford 100, $150. So have something for him. Then you have the guy in the middle who's the same way, but he's not rich, but he can pull the trigger on something that's $300 or $400. So have something for him. And then have your high end collector, or like the grail, the guy who wants a grail from you, whether it's a published piece or whatever, have something in the higher end. And I'm just using these numbers as examples, like say, $150, $400, and have something at, after that, that's maybe $800, $900 or more, whatever, So this way it's like any other company. We can use, Apple's a horrible example because all their stuff is expensive. I don't know, any kind of a tech company or a car company, even. A car company is a good example. Like they'll have Nissan has the Nissan Altima. They'll have the base model Altima, mid-level Altima, and then the granddaddy Altima that has all the bells and whistles and things like that. Mm-hmm. That way it gives everybody who wants an Altima an option to pick and choose what they want and what they can afford. So artwork can work the same way, original artwork specifically. Like I said, try to hit at least 3 price points for your collectors. Because you don't want anybody to miss out. You don't only want to be pitching towards the high end guys, because that limits people. It limits how many people are going to be able to buy your artwork, how much revenue is going to come in for you potentially, and it might even chase some people away. It might cause some people to just give up. It's like there's artists who I love that I just know I'll never own an original piece of artwork from because I can't afford it. They don't have anything lower than the high end priced things, and kind of just accept it. It doesn't mean I don't like their artwork anymore, but I've stopped pursuing it. Mm-hmm. So that's my recommendation to artists is to hit your price points and have at least 3. You can have more than 3, mm-hmm. but I'd make that the base. Make something and the low end stuff. It doesn't have to be a full blown finished piece. It can be quick sketches and things like that, or smaller pieces. And the middle of the road thing can be, you know, a little bit more or a little bit larger or whatever. And then your high end thing can be something that you spend 12 hours on or whatever, double page spread, whatever you want to be, use your imagination. Sure. But, be aware of that. Be aware that like, there's a lot of people who are going to want your artwork and a lot of people who will buy your artwork. So try to hit all those markets. Like with me, even with published artwork, I have my finished pieces that turn into covers, which are of course like my, we'll say they're my grail pieces. Those are the most expensive ones. But under that, I'll also sell off my my rough sketches, my concept sketches, and I'll sell those for considerably less than the finished artwork. And some people really like that stuff. Some people really really do. There's a lot of collectors out there who like unfinished artwork. Mm-hmm. They like to see the thought process. They like to see the mistakes. They're into that thing. There's tons of collectors who buy exclusively that stuff just because they like it. There's guys who like the quick stuff. Like everything I draw for the most part starts out as a little sketch about this big. And that's my initial concept sketch. And sometimes they're really detailed. Sometimes they're really loose, whatever. It doesn't matter. But what I do is I draw tons of those. I'll use an 11 by 17 piece of paper and just fill it up with those sketches from all sorts of different projects. Mm-hmm. And that's like my really low end published artwork for me, original artwork sale. Usually I sell those between like $80 and $90. Technically it's published artwork. You know, you can see the pose and say, oh, this is from this issue or this cover or whatever, you know, it's not the finished piece, but that guy who has a lower end job and a lower income or anything like that, or just can't afford a lot of artwork. Mm-hmm. He's got a piece from you too. And even with commissions, it's the same thing. Like offer quick sketches, head sketches for, you know, a reasonable amount of money. I'm not going to say a little bit of money, but a reasonable amount. And then do that with your commissions too. Have like the quick thing and then the slightly more detailed thing. Maybe it's a bust, but it's not completely tight and it's not completely clean. You know, that's your middle of the road thing. And then have your finished commission, whether it's a sketch cover or whatever, where it's inked and colored and whatever else, it's full figure, so on and so forth. So
right, that's super considerate of your fans, like that.
That's kind of how I feel.
To put such a spread for something like that, because it is kind of disheartening if you get to the convention and then you find out that somebody's sketches, they're only doing them for $400 or $500. And I understand that some people have to do that that's all they're going to do. They can't get through them in the time that they have. I know there's a couple of artists that they can't run their booth and sketch at the same time. Either they don't have someone there to help, or they're trying to have interactions with fans, and so they end up taking the commissions home and then sending them. They don't like doing that, so they just raise the price. So it's like, I just don't have as many that I actually do at the show. So, but that becomes an access issue at that point too, right? Like, fan comes in with, you know, $100 in his pocket and or her pocket, and they show up and, the conventions are always so full of huge of opportunities to spend that money, right? And so if you put it down into one artist and then the rest of the show is just waiting for that commission to get done, I guess.
You got nothing else to do.
Right.
Yeah, you just walk around bored.
Right.
Like one thing that Ryan Kincaid does that's really cool at conventions is Ryan Kincaid, he'll say, what can you afford? I'll draw something that matches that. So if a guy comes up and goes, hey, look, I only got $50 to spend. What can you do for $50? He's really cool about it. He'll say, okay, well, he'll draw it and say, here's what I consider to be $50. And sometimes you get a little bit more, sometimes you get a little bit less. It just depends on the situation. Or if the guy comes up and says, I got $2,000, you know, I'm gonna give you $2,000. What can you do for me? Then he's probably like, okay, well, let me take it home, you know, and I'll draw it at home and we'll work it that way. But he says straight up that it's like a name your price commission is what Ryan Kincaid does. And I think that's a cool idea. I think more people should try that too. You know,
that's a fabulous idea,
right? You're not getting ripped off. Like the guy's being honest. I can afford $50. It's up to you at that point as the artist to, you know, consider what you think is fair for the price that your fan or your customer is not just willing to drop, but can afford to drop on you.
Right. No, that's a wonderful idea. I love that. Yeah. I love hearing cool ideas that people do with that to have like, and what a nice fan experience, you know, somebody gets a chance to drop that money, and that's awesome. So, if someone is like trying to get into this, I see a lot of posts on Reddit and Twitter that says, I want to become a cover artist. I want to get into doing, what would you suggest be the sort of a quick path for somebody that is looking to get into that. If they're, you know, like obviously the things is like the get good at drawing and and that sort of stuff. But like if you have the if you have that side, there's plenty of resources for that on YouTube and books and school you could go and pay for. But like, what's the other things that the stuff nobody tells you about in those? Like, you're a good artist, now what?
Yeah, that's a good question too. Gosh, it's a little hard to answer. I'll come up with an answer right off the cuff. It's a little hard to come up with an answer because things are so different now than they were when I broke in. Like when I broke in, it was, things were, the social media really wasn't a thing yet. It was still more of a formal, like you submit to a publisher at a convention, do portfolio reviews, so on and so forth. And, you know, after some time you'll get some work. But nowadays with things like Kickstarter and social media being what they are, it feels like it's completely different. It doesn't, and a lot of times you go to conventions nowadays, like a publisher may or may not be there. And if they are, they probably aren't doing portfolio reviews, you know? So these days, if I was trying to break in and I had no contacts at all, because I had no contacts at all to the industry when I broke in, like I got lucky. My story is it's a luck story with how I broke in. But if I was in that same position now in 2022, I would draw and post to social media as much as I possibly could. Mm-hmm. I would try to build as much of a fan base off of social media as I could. I would share my artwork to other pages, like groups of fan art and whatever else you want to call it. Like I draw Black Cat, and I would join as many and share it to as many, say pinup pages as I could, comic book pages as I could, so on and so forth, with the hopes of maybe getting noticed, because publishers do look through those pages. Not only publishers, but artists do too. Like there's been so many times over the years where I've been on DeviantArt or Facebook or Instagram and just going through and I find some cool artwork that I have never heard of or seen before. And yeah, there's been times where I pitched into my publisher. I'll go to my editor at Zenoscope, be like, Dave, like, I found this on Facebook. Like this kid's pretty cool. What do you think? And, you know, sometimes they get work out of it. Sometimes they don't. Like, it depends on what the publisher thinks. But utilizing social media and, like I said, being as frequent as you can is a great way to get noticed, we'll say. I'm not going to say it's going to get you published, but you got a better chance of getting noticed with the more abundance that you put into it. With social media and things like that, also, artists and publishers are more accessible now than they ever have been before. You can easily drop a message to IDW or Dynamite or Aspen through Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. Like you can drop your artwork into a message and say, "Hey, my name is Joe. I drew this. What do you think? Could hope to hear from you." You can do that. God, there's so many ways with Facebook and social media nowadays.
That's interesting. Have you heard of people saying that they're responsive to that? Because a lot of times the publishers are like, well, don't, you know, no soliciting, because they're afraid, yeah, you're going to send me something. But like a sample of artwork, right?
It's a sample of artwork. Okay. Yeah. Again, I'm not a publisher, sure. So I can't say for sure.
Yeah.
It's one way to try it. Like,
sure.
God, I got to be careful with what I say here.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Sometimes it's a matter of wearing a publisher down. I mean, that's what I did with Zenoscope when I broke in. One of the writers at Zenoscope saw my artwork hanging up and said, "Hey, you should submit this to my editor Ralph at Zenoscope. You know, he might like it." So I sent it to their guy Ralph, and he's like, "That's cool. We don't have any use for it right now, but we'll let you know if we do." And like some time goes by, and I never heard anything back. So then I started hammering them with new artwork every 2 weeks. I was unsoliciting artwork towards Ralph, just trying to get something out of him, you know. And eventually something cracked and I wore him down, and they're like, okay, we'll use something, Jesus Christ, you know.
Yeah.
With sending a publisher non-solicited artwork usually pertains to like a story or a complete comic book, something like that, because I hope we're not going off base here with it, but with that, say I write a comic book about, I don't know, a superhero, and I submit it to Zenoscope, and by pure chance, they put out a comic book story some months down the road about a superhero, and I think it resembles my superhero, even if it doesn't look like him, have the same name, dress like him, or anything like that. I have the right to take legal action, whether it's warranted or not. Mm-hmm. You know, I can call ownership of that, or at least try to. So that's why publishers won't want you to submit non-solicited, non-copyrighted stories and finished stories, we'll say. Mm-hmm. As far as pinup artwork and stuff goes, I honestly can't say for sure. That's a bit harder to contest and say, oh, no, we didn't steal your idea. Mm-hmm. You know, because the thing about copyrights is you can't copyright an idea. Mm-hmm. You can copyright a physical image with writing. I'm not quite sure how it works. It's got to work somehow, though. But you can't copyright an idea. Like, if I come up with the idea of Superman, like I just come up with this idea of a really strong character who can fly and he's bulletproof and he has black hair and he wears blue. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not on paper. That's just words I'm putting out there. That's an idea. That's all that is. Anybody can take that and run with it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not copyrightable. But as soon as I put Superman on paper and I mass produce Superman in some way, and I have a paper trail of that character that I created it, then there's legitimacy to it.
Right.
I feel like we're going off on a bit of a tangent here.
No, you're making that. I love this copyright in comics. I love that sort of stuff. It's interesting to see. You'll go to comic book conventions. We do panels where we talk about like the business of comic books, how to start your LLC, and where you can print from and whatnot. And you'll get a whole bunch of people who ask. They're like, I have the best idea for a story, and we're like, great. You know, pitch it. What's your story? And they'll be like, it's a story about werewolves.
Mm-hmm. That's not a pitch, dude.
And they have one of them has a gun.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and we're exactly. That's an idea. That is.
Okay, where's the hook? Yeah, where's the story?
Yeah. Is there a story to this? Do they do something? Are they go somewhere? Or the other side of it is they'll say, they'll talk to you for 2 hours about how the magic works in their world.
Oh yeah. Oh my
and
god.
And then, wonderful. That is world building. This is not a story. What happens to the people who interact with this system?
I'm not emotionally engaged with this at all. All you do is tell me about their powers.
Yes.
You know, that's all that is.
Yeah. Which is great. It's wonderful. You know what I mean? But it's not what you think it is. It's not what they think it is.
No, there's no attachment to anything at that point. There's no attachment to characters and personalities. Yep. We could try to take it back on track about breaking in, I guess. Social media is a great way to do it. Like that's what I can say. Post regularly, post frequently. Don't be afraid to reach out. Like a lot of times publishers aren't going to approach you. Sometimes they will because of social media. Like that's happened tons of times. Like I see it all the time. Publishers will approach you once you have a fan base. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. You have to build a fan base, and to build a fan base, you got to not be shy. You got to be okay with putting yourself out there, being okay with, you're going to get rejected. You know, sometimes people are going to say thank you, but no thank you. Mm-hmm. But other times people are going to say, we can use this, or we think this is great, things like that. If you don't want to message, say, the company directly, the publisher directly, you can find out who the editor is. Like, that's what I did. I found out who the editor of Zenoscope was, and I started contacting him directly. Again, a lot of these dudes are on social media.
Yep.
Whether they want to or not get your messages, I can't say for sure. Yep. So I can't, you know, it depends on the person.
Sure. Well, similar. I reached out to you on social media and asked if you'd be willing to do this, and you were down.
Exactly.
So sometimes it all depends on the person that you meet, and if they don't want to chat with you, I send all sorts of requests that never get any response, and that's fine. You know,
right? You have to be okay with it. You just do. You have to be okay with rejection if you're trying to break into this industry. Not that it's a big part of it, but it kind of is.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense.
It's a part of it.
So, Mike, you got any upcoming projects that you want to make sure that you plug before we finish up here?
Nothing on the table that I do. Yes, I have tons of things on the table. Okay. I just don't know. I don't know what I can mention yet.
Okay.
Like over the summer, I signed a new agreement with Coffin Comics to do, I think, 9 Lady Death covers coming up. So, like, I have a big Lady Death following right now.
Awesome.
So I'm sure people will be pleased to hear that. I can mention that. So those will be coming out in 2023. Okay. Oh gosh, like I'm looking at a piece right now I just finished, and I don't know if I can mention it.
Any shows or what's the best way to, if someone does want to get a commission, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
The best way to do it, like I was just saying, like hit me up on social media. I'm on Instagram and Facebook mostly. Like just send me a message, you know, don't drop it in my comics. I'm probably not going to see it. Like send me a message. I will eventually see it, even if it's not right away. Mm-hmm. And I always try to respond to everyone. I say I have a 99% success rate replying to everyone. Right now I'm a little tight. I can't take on new commissions right now. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that we couldn't maybe schedule something down the road. It's kind of a gray area for me right now. So I'm a little reluctant to say, yeah, hit me up and ask for commissions right now, because I don't want to keep anybody waiting forever. That's all.
Yeah, no problem. But
that's the best way to do it. Like I'm always on social media. It's like where I conduct like all my business now. It's through like Messenger and things like that.
Awesome. Well, certainly everybody should go and follow your social medias, and so they can see what you're up to and when these announcements and when the new pieces come out and when you are able to publish these, that people can put it on their hold list or their pick list at their local comic book store, and then keep in touch with you whenever you are making an appearance, that they can come by and say hi and support and enjoy all your wonderful artwork. It's been great having you with me here today, and I appreciate you taking the time, and I hope everything's going well, and you have a great portfolio of work, and this, it's really cool to hear about like the way that you've put it all together into a working career here and stuff, and so it gives a lot of hope, I bet, to people who are aspiring to get into a position similar to yours.
Yeah, that's cool. I hope so too. I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to do this was to hopefully inspire, you know, people who like to draw. Like that's honestly one of the reasons I always wanted to do this. Like I wanted to give back in some way. So hopefully you're right. You know, it's awesome when people come up and they say, oh man, you're my favorite artist, or, you know, I learned how to draw this from you. Like that feels so good. Like that's better than a paycheck.
That's awesome. that's great, man. I appreciate that. Yeah. That's awesome. Cool. Okay. So thank you very much for being here. And everybody, make sure that you follow us, and also follow follow Validity Studios on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and TikTok now. And also make sure that you are subscribing and sharing the world's greatest comic book podcast, which is where the Lane Urich Report is published through Defin Media. Thank you very much. And thank you, Mike, and have a great day.
Thanks, guys.